Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Africa for Zero Waste podcast, where we delve into impactful conversations on zero waste initiatives and highlight the stories of individuals driving innovative solutions across Africa. I'm Wayne Miyokuti, the Clean Air Program Manager for Gaia Africa. Today, we tackle a subject that sits at the intersection of the environment, climate, economics, and justice, waste to energy incineration. To some, it promises a silver bullet solution, turning mountains of garbage into electricity. But for many experts and communities, and in fact, it's a mirage. A costly distraction that burns through money, resources, and livelihoods, often leaving behind more harm than good. In a continent where over half of our waste is organic, where municipal budgets are thin, and monitoring toxic emissions is minimal, does this imported solution truly make sense? Or are we repeating a pattern, adopting the technologies of others without questioning whether they serve our realities, our people, or our planet? To unpack this, I'm joined by an exceptional panel of thinkers and practitioners shaping the conversation around waste and justice in Africa. And with me, we have Mario Villela, Gaia's Global Climate Program Director. And we also have Rachel Muturi, Eskeda Ogichu, and Mikel Tatenda Aruberi too. First of all, Mariel is currently leading the development and implementation of Gaia's Global Climate Program, which includes Gaia's global campaigns and strategies around climate change with a focus on methane and organics management, zero waste solutions to climate change, engaging in policy advocacy at the UNFCCC and other key international climate policy spaces in collaboration with the Wide Gaia Network and regional offices. Also, like I mentioned earlier on, Rachel Muturi is Africa's regional coordinator for the International Alliance of Waste Speakers. So Rachel Muturi was born and raised in a dump site community in Nakuru, Kenya, where she grew up waste speaking alongside her family. Today, she lives just 100 meters from the same dump site, a constant reminder of both the struggles and resilience of waste speakers from these lived experiences. Rachel has grown into a strong advocate for justice and dignity for waste workers. She now serves as the Africa Coordinator for the International Alliance for Waste Speakers, working with grassroots leaders across the continent of Africa to defend livelihoods, fight harmful waste-to-energy projects, and build inclusive waste solutions, zero-waste solutions that put people first. We have with us Eskeda Ogichu, the Executive Director of EcoJustice Ethiopia, who has an LLB in law and a master's degree in environment and natural resources law. Eskeda has over 10 years of experience in environmental advocacy, legal research, and project management. He is the founder of EcoJustice Ethiopia and the former director of the Environment and Natural Resources Law Center at Makerere University. Additionally, he lectures at the law school and engages in research-based advocacy work, which includes consulting on the enactment and amendment of new laws that promote sustainable development and creating awareness to facilitate the better implementation of existing legislation. Finally, we have Mikel Aruberitu of the Center for Alternative Development in Zimbabwe. Mikel is based in Zimbabwe. He holds honors in sociology and development studies, as well as a master's in public policy. He began his work on climate and environment as a consultant on gender and just climate policy at the Center for Alternative Development in Zimbabwe in 2020. And during this time, he was involved in resisting a major project on the Sengwa coal-fired power plant. It was during this time that he became aware of a proposed waste-to-energy incinerator in the municipality of Harare, which had just entered an agreement with some companies led by Geo Pomona. So Mikel and CAD team initiated intense negotiations with the city of Harare to halt the waste-to-energy projects in Harare. Once again, welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us today. Let's begin with a big question, Mariel. Why are waste-to-energy incinerators considered a false solution to addressing our waste management crisis?
Hello, Wayinmi. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here. What a good start. Very powerful question and something that comes up very often in waste management and also climate conversations. And I must say that the first thing I want to say about the problems related to waste-to-energy incineration is that incineration is really not a solution at a time of a climate emergency as we are living. Because for the very simple reason, because when you are burning waste, especially waste that has a lot of plastic or a lot of organics, as it's often the case in the global south, most of the municipal solid waste has a majority of organics, and it has also a big portion of single-use plastic. All of these materials, when they burn, they release carbon dioxide and methane. Carbon dioxide, of course, is this greenhouse gas causing climate change, but methane is actually one that is even more powerful than CO2 in the short term. It has a much bigger effect in contributing to global warming. So burning waste is definitely not a solution if we want to be reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. So it's definitely a false solution in that way. It's also not a clean energy source. When we look at renewable energy, cleaner renewable energy, definitely incineration is not counted there. And the very big problem as well that incineration has is that precisely it's burning materials, these organic waste, plastic that, you know, it's not always recyclable, but still it could be, you know, addressed in a different way. Even recyclable products like glass, like paper, like a lot of things end up in an incinerator because the system is set up in a way that it acts like a vacuum cleaner. An incinerator, once it's set up, it really needs a big feedstock of municipal solid waste. So it's in most cases, in places where there is an incinerator, you will see that the recycling rates are a lot lower because the system is set up in a way that a lot of the recyclable materials end up in the incinerator. Therefore, incineration becomes a real obstacle to circular economy, to upstream solutions in the waste hierarchy, reducing waste, reducing recycling, etc. And they become, even especially for organics, they become an obstacle to actually push, incentivize communities and cities and countries to think about, you know, what are the steps that are necessary to treat waste more sustainably. Source separation, composting, zero waste strategies, which are really the strategies that we should be pushing for. So these are the main two things that, you know, climate change, obstacle to climate change and obstacle to circular economy. These are like the main two things I want to highlight just to start with. These are also the reasons why the European Union a few years ago excluded incineration from the list of sustainable finance activities. They came up with a list of all the activities that deserve sustainable finance, and they were very clear. Incineration is not part of this list because it contributes to climate change too much. It's an obstacle for circular economy. So, you know, it's not just communities on the ground or NGOs or environmentalists that are concerned about incineration. It's actually coming from the very top of institutions dealing with sustainability and dealing with criteria for climate finance that realize what a mistake it is. And this is why in Europe, there's been a lot of pushback on incineration. But there are more reasons why incinerators are a problem and that are more, you know, are more relevant for the global south. The first one, of course, is like how expensive it is. It is like really expensive. It really requires high up investment. It creates even more debt in countries that are already struggling with debt. So definitely not good for the economy. And even worse, its incinerators will be taking away the livelihoods of the people on the ground that are doing the recycling. So this is a massive social justice issue that incinerators are, you know, exacerbating, which is the fact that they are competing for these materials that could be, that should be recyclable, that should be recycled, and instead they are, you know, excluding waste pickers, the communities of waste pickers that are the recycling system in the global south. So it's displacing livelihoods, exposing the residents to the pollution, which is the final, and the final reason I want to expose incinerators are generating all this air pollution, all this fly ash and bottom ash, not only contaminating the air, but also the soil and the water. So really, it's not a solution for the waste because it's actually producing toxic waste. So instead of having the waste that you had before, you now have contamination in the form of fly ash, in the form of contamination in the ground. We have more poverty, more exclusion, more injustice. Really, incineration is only explained because some people are making a profit. There's nothing else to go for them.
Thanks, Mario. That's a sobering truth. What's sold as an innovation, in fact, can be regression dressed in technology, which is unfortunate. Moving on, Rachel, you grew up near a dump site in Nakuru, Kenya, and today you represent waste pickers across Africa. How does waste to energy incinerator affect the livelihood of informal waste pickers? Like the informal waste sector, partially like waste pickers. How does waste to energy incineration affect the economy of waste pickers?
Okay. Thank you so much, Wayne. And I thank you all for this important discussion. So waste energy incinerators have a serious negative impact on the livelihood of informal recycling sector, especially the waste pickers. First, incinerators burn the same materials that the waste pickers depend on for income, like how Marielle had said earlier, like paper, plastics, and the recyclable material. So when these materials are taken away and changed to the incineration, waste pickers lose their main source of income. 90% of the waste pickers live day to day from what they collect and also sell. So this immediately like pushes the families into poverty. And the second thing that I'd say is these projects are designed or are made without consulting or including the waste pickers. So the government and the companies move forward with this contract and technology plan, while the people who have been managing waste on the ground for years are excluded. So it is social injustice and just economic exclusion. And again, the incineration also leads to job losses and also environmental harm. For example, a single incinerator may employ a few people or a few technicians, but it depleted hundreds or even thousands of informal recyclers or the waste pickers. At the same time, like how Marielle had said earlier, it produces toxic emissions that even threaten the health of nearby communities, including the same people who once worked at the dump site or the landfill. So in short, the waste to energy incineration does not solve African waste problem. It destroys livelihood, if I may say, and also it undermines the people who are already providing real recycling permission. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Rachel. Listening to you just reminds me that Waste is not just a technical issue. Like waste to energy incineration is not just a technical issue. It's also a social one. And behind every ton of trash are people who depend on it for survival. Let's always remember that. Moving on, Eskeda, your work in Ethiopia gives you a front row seat to the region's waste realities. Is this waste stream in Africa suitable for incineration?
The simple answer, absolutely not. The waste in Africa, in our cities, is not suitable much for incineration. This is because African waste composition is mainly consistent of organic material. So the fundamental problem is one of chemistry, you know. So incinerations are designed for the waste of the global north, basically, which is predominantly dry, high calorific material like paper, plastic, and packaging. This is because many of the developed countries have a robust recycling and composting system that already remove the wet organic fraction. In contrast, if you take a look at the municipal solid waste stream across most of the urban Africa, you can see that it can be characterized by three things. First, there is a high moisture content. One, to begin with, our hot and humid climate and relatively poor or developing collection systems means that the waste often sits and retains water. Second, high organic fraction means the largest component by far is wet perishable organic materials like food scraps, trimmings from the gardens, and also agricultural byproducts. The third reason is, all this has a very low calorific value. So high moisture and high organic content translates directly to low calorific value, meaning it simply won't burn efficiently. So trying to incinerate this kind of wet organic waste is like trying to, basically light a wet wood or log. It requires continuous feeding of auxiliary fossil fuels to sustain combustion, driving up operational costs, and, completely defeating the purpose of generating green energy. To even look at it from a more particular focus, we can take the case of our capital city, Addis Ababa, which has built the continent's first waste-to-energy facility, the RUPI waste-to-energy facility. And in this very real-world, high-profile example, right here in my city, we can see that one, the solid waste produced by Addis Ababa has an organic waste content that is typically north of 60%. This is a massive fraction that is ideal for composting, but terrible for burning. Secondly, the operational reality. So if you take a look at the RUPI power plant, incinerator plant, while, headlines, see it as, continent's first, it has been plagued by well-documented operational difficulties, maintenance issues since its launch. And the main reason for these failures is the very issue we have described. The waste simply doesn't meet the necessary fuel standards to sustain the required combustion for efficient power generation. Other than that, we also are new to the technology. So when technical problems arise within this incineration plant, the solving it is quite cumbersome because we don't have the spare parts, technical knowledge is also limited, and the technology is not inherently in ours. So the irony is that the most valuable part of our waste, the organic matter, is being force-fed to a machine that really cannot handle it. Instead of being used to create rich soils for our, agricultural sector. So obviously, there is a much better path to managing the waste in our African cities, and that is the zero waste approach, which creates a lot of value, both in terms of creating employment opportunity, increasing creating additional value from the waste, and also making sure that you know, the waste management system actually is handled in a way that does not put our cities into debt and our governments into, again, perpetual debt that we are already being overburdened with. So, you know, incineration, when it comes to incineration, our waste is simply not compatible for it. Our economies are also not compatible for it. And there is a much better sustainable option, like a zero waste approach, that, like I said, would create jobs for our youth, regenerate our soil rather than, you know, basically pollute the air and put us into further debt.
Thank you so much, Eskeda, for that insightful response. So in essence, promoting waste to energy incineration in Africa is like pushing Africa to import a solution designed for a problem it doesn't have in the first place. Moving on, Mikhail, you fought against a major waste to energy incineration and incinerator deal in Harare. What does this mean for the democratic processes in Africa when governments agree to projects like waste to energy incinerators?
So thank you for this opportunity, and I would like to support and reiterate what others have said. So concerning our democratic process, this waste to energy that we fought in since from 2021 till today, it was done and in a very undemocratic or an untransparent process where there was no consultation with the public. And the reason why there wasn't any consultation is they knew from the beginning that this project was going to be rejected by the citizens, by the residents, and the ratepayers. So it started off without any consultation, and they continue to pursue this project with disregard of the people. And until today, this was one of our court challenge where we're challenging the principle on which this project was being implemented. And for the municipality, they were just trying to defend this as a sort of like a solution to our challenge of solid waste that we is in Harare. But even in their argument, it couldn't really test the waters in terms of is this like the right project that is fit for Harare, given that, you know, our solid waste management system is still centralized. And even if they implement a waste-to-energy incinerator project, it will still be crippled by the same problems that this previous system or the systems that they have today is facing. And also the other side, they're also trying to promote just a sort of like a green and renewable project, since you are generating your waste from, sorry, you are generating energy from waste. And again, this didn't hold water because, you know, with waste-to-energy, it's even more, it produces more emissions in that you are trying to burn, you know, waste. And a lot of plastic is very polluting. It produces a lot of emissions like bottom ash, fly ash. So these are the things that have characterized a lot of waste to energy. But these things were never clear, and they were never made public. And they went on to implement this agreement, to sign an agreement, and we ended up challenging the agreement, trying to put a halt on this agreement. But we see that there was no consultation. And also there was the issue of the influence of money. Like perhaps the municipality felt like they were going to earn something. So not the municipality per se, but some people. And this has been the challenge so far. And they've never been transparent since then, because the municipality, they deny, they say that the project is now on hold. But it's on hold. And what they ended up doing was, the company that was supposed to construct this geopomona waste to energy incinerator ended up getting the tender to collect refuse for Harare. So we see waste to energy or project like this as further taking away the power of the municipality, because even in the agreement it says that the municipality was going to pay Geopomona for taking out the trash, taking out our trash. And in that doesn't make logic. You'd ask yourself, so if they are going to pay, why can't they just leave the municipality continue to do their job? And if once you give a private or company the contract to carry out our trash, who is going to hold them accountable? So this is what we are facing. So at this moment, the municipality is saying that the project has been taken over by the government, which we don't believe. So we have been trying to build some form of a mass around this project, challenging this project at a budget meeting, council meeting, to actually say we want the evidence, the proof of who is getting paid, or where is the money for refuse collection going. So this has been our battle so far, resisting a waste to energy project in Zimbabwe.
I can also attest to a similar experience in Lagos, Nigeria, where there was no consultation with the communities, and then an agreement of such a scale was classified. There's no public access to this agreement, and it just seems to be coming from some authorities above. And also noting that in Zimbabwe, Geogenics, which initially got the contract to do this project, is known in Europe for major corruption issues. And unfortunately, this is what we are seeing in Africa. Companies that have corruption issues in Europe coming to Africa as a new haven for such corrupt projects as well. Moving on, Marielle, we often hear the claim, it works in Europe, why not Africa? Why is that comparison misleading? And why is it important to challenge such narratives in order to uncover real reasons these projects are on the rise in Africa?
Yes, thank you for the question, William. It's always really jumps out at me when I hear incineration works in Europe, because if anything, I see so much evidence of incineration not working in Europe. And that claim that incineration works in Europe is just propaganda. It's just promotion by industries that want to sell this technology to the global south. And what is true indeed is that, you know, in the 90s, several countries in Europe did invest in incineration a lot. And when I say rich countries, I mean Denmark, Germany, Sweden, Norway, Finland. More, you know, in the last 10 years, UK, the United Kingdom has invested a lot in incineration. So in these countries, there's definitely a very high percentage of waste that is treated in incineration. Does that make it successful? No. And the reality is that these countries, I was mentioning before the fact that the sustainable finance taxonomy of the European Union excluded incineration from the list of activities, but also in these countries, like Denmark, for example, has realized how much this over-reliance on incineration has jeopardized their climate targets. And it was in 2021, actually, that the Danish parliament passed legislation in the parliament that to phase down, to decommission incinerators, basically to reduce the amount of waste that they are sending to incineration, because otherwise they realize that the contribution to greenhouse gas emissions inventory is just not sustainable. So we see that in Europe, the pattern has been, the path has been that 20 years ago, there was rich countries invested a lot in incineration, and then now they are backtracking. Now they need to come back down. They need to, like, oh, they realize this mistake that it is because of the contribution of climate change. And because I want to emphasize this point of incinerators creating a lock-in situation. Once you have the incinerator, you really have to keep feeding it. And an incinerator is a big investment, so it's going to stay there for decades, for 20, 30 years, precisely the time that we have now that we need to be scaling back on you know, carbon-intensive technologies and industries, the time that we need to decarbonize our economies, really is not the time to be. So they're realizing, these rich countries, realizing that to commit to these climate targets, they really need to scale back on their incineration infrastructure. And this is why, or at least this is one of the reasons we could say that there's some industries, there's some companies that, you know, their market is coming, you know, it's getting smaller. So they are looking for other markets, looking to going into the global south. And this is where they are very happy to be portraying the, you know, some big incinerators, famous incinerators like the one in Copenhagen or the one in Vienna, incinerators that are, that have been put there very, you know, that there's a big comms operation around them to make them look very nice. Not only we know about these systemic problems, the lock-in, the economy, and so on, there are several, the Zero Waste Europe has been releasing data and research together with Toxico Watch. They have been monitoring the pollution around incinerators and the levels of pollution that they see in food grown near incinerators. They've been like analyzing eggs and other kind of food and other kind of, you know, plants around the incinerators. It's the pollution that it's there. It's way beyond the standards. We have also case studies in the Netherlands, incinerators that have been repeatedly failing to comply with the pollution regulations. I live in the UK and I see countries all over, I live in the UK and I see communities all over the country standing up against incinerators because of the pollution that they are receiving. And that makes it like very concerning for the public health issues. So there's plenty of examples in Europe showing that incineration is not working, it's not desirable. And again, this comes from institutions and governments, not only environmentalists. What's more, the Global South has a need for development and for finance, not only a need, it's a debt, it's a climate debt. It has an opportunity to leapfrog ahead of Global North. These countries in Europe show the path that doesn't need to be repeated. It doesn't make sense for the Global South to invest in incineration, make the same mistakes that have been made in the North, and then having to scale back. Instead, the Global South has an opportunity to invest, as of now, in zero waste strategies, making sure that waste pickers are on board, putting people on the front, making sure that there is sustainable solutions that we know they are available, they are suitable, and they are a lot more suitable for Global South context. They are also the solutions for the North, and yet the North, the Global North countries even have, I don't know, problematic situation because they really need to undo the mistakes that they've done in the past.
Thank you very much, Mario. That was really insightful. Thank you very much. Unfortunately, these failed incinerators are being promoted in the Global South. And I believe our governments in Africa need to simply scoff at proposals promoting waste-to-energy incinerators as foreign investments. It's simply the recycling of bad ideas. Moving on, Rachel, what case studies exist of waste pickers campaigning against waste-to-energy incinerators in Africa?
Okay, the case study that I can talk about on incinerator in South Africa, Cape Town, in an area that called PAL. So there was an incinerator that was approved, but because of the organizations like Groundwork and Gaia, the community and also the community, they fought against that approval of the incinerator, and they were together with the farmers because PAL is an area where it is a farming area, and now the farmers were saying that they were worried that if they can be incinerated, it means that their production will be affected, and so it stopped and never continued. Again, the second one is right now, South Africa Waste Pickers Association, which is SAPWA, is still negotiating about it. And they had a march last year where they were fighting, where where they were fighting and were submitting their petition against the light pen that is being approved at Johannesburg. And so they approved the incinerator to be brought there. Then SAPWA went to Department of Environmental Affairs, that is FFE, to say this cannot happen. And now after they sent the petition to FFE, they didn't get any response that they will cancel the license or they will do that. So Groundwork went ahead and filed a case against the government that they were against the incinerator, because when they talk about it, they say it's waste of energy, but they don't tell people the effect of it. And so they want to build the incinerator, and they don't go to the high they don't go to high class areas or, you know, the gated community. They go to locations where the poor community and they don't tell people that the incinerator will pollute the air or pollute the soil, or it will cause the the defect or children who are disabled, who have polio and all that. So now they talk about the incinerator, but they don't tell people what will be the lead effect. So they just tell people that it will be opportunities of work. It will come with opportunities of work. Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Rachel. What you said now just reminded me of, for example, the Repi Waste Energy Incinerator. When it was launched, it was being promoted in global journalists, like global media houses, as the as a new solution in Africa and all that. But nobody's talking about its failures currently. And that's something I think the media houses need to do, because they promoted it seriously. But now, with all the failures, nobody's talking about it. So, yeah, thank you very much once again, Rachel. And back to you, Eskeda. Since the majority of Africa's waste stream is organic, what waste management solutions should African governments prioritize investing in instead of incineration?
Yeah, thanks, Wemi. So, I mean, the top priorities are not about high-tech machineries. They should be about social infrastructure, labor integration, and biological renewal. So African governments must pivot their investments to the solutions that empower most people and close the nutrient loop. So what do we mean by this? It means we must focus on the single most impactful investment, which is not a machine, but it is in people and policy. So the foundation of any viable system is source separation, mandating the separation of wet organic waste from dry recyclable materials at the household, at the market, and at the institutional level is extremely important. So we have to make sure that we promote for our local governments that they invest in the foundations of zero waste, which starts with the right laws and policies that promote source separation. Because without clean separation, no technology works efficiently, regardless of what you're considering. Then we have to make sure that we are working in integrating with the existing economy. So if you take a look at our cities, they already have a massive cost-effective recycling system, the informal waste pickers. Governments must immediately recognize and integrate and formalize these millions of young people into a system by establishing cooperatives, providing contracts, fair prices, and dignified working conditions. Because this creates a secure income stream and an instant network of decentralized material recovery facilities to handle the dry waste like the plastics, the paper, and the metals that can be recovered and recycled immediately. So this is the most efficient, job-intensive, and least capital-intensive step. Second, we have to also make sure we invest in decentralized composting for soil renewal. So once we have the organic fraction separated, the highest priority is making sure that we drive value from it and we return it to the land. So with organic waste content typically north of 60% in cities like ours, Addis Ababa, the large-scale decentralized composting centers are essential. So these are central because, one, they are low-tech, simple to operate, and highly labor-intensive, which means they create thousands of jobs for our use. So we must invest in composting and allowing small businesses, SMEs to form around that. And so we need to have laws and policies that promote this. Because composting converts the urban bio-waste into a nutrient-rich soil. This directly combats severe soil degradation, which is a rampant problem in many of our African countries. This also directly combats, the water retention problem we have, and it reduces reliance on expensive imported chemical fertilizers, which will in turn boost food security and urban and peri-urban farmers. Once we, get this investment in decentralized composting and we empower our worker, our young generations to work in the sector, we have to also, expand and add special values, add technologies that add special values, like black soldier flies. As composting systems mature, investment should also move to specialized high value bioconversions like black soldier fly or BASF technologies, because what do BASF technologies offer? They offer protein and feed security. So BASF is the ultimate value added solution for specifically high protein organic streams like, market and food waste. So the larvae quickly convert the larvae from black soldier flies quickly convert the organic waste into high protein animal feed for poultry, fish, and they are also creating a powerful organic fertilizer, which we call FRAS, in this process. So this technology directly addresses Africa's chronic shortage of affordable animal feed, making local farmers more competitive and less reliant on volatile global markets that they currently depend on, unfortunately, for importing chemical fertilizers. So by prioritizing these steps, I would say social integration, composting, and strategic bioconversion, our governments in Africa should choose a model that is technically suitable for our waste, which is inherent in and specializes in wide job creation, builds a sustainable circular economy from the ground up. This way, we do not only solve the problem of waste management, but we also create a lot of additional value within the economic system.
Found it interesting when you spoke about composting, especially black soldier fly farming. In Africa, at least I know about Nigeria, where for poultry and fish farmers, the major constraint of their farming is actually feed. And then black soldier fly promises to actually reduce cost of production by 30 to 50%. So I think these are solutions that are practical and should be adopted across Africa. And moving on, sometimes also, this is for you, Mikhail, I try to put myself in the place of African governments where I see their challenges, where they are being overwhelmed by the generation of solid waste in their municipalities, and then African governments also struggling to provide electricity for its people. And someone falsely comes to promise that you have a technology that will burn your waste away and provide electricity. So this makes them fall easily for such promises. What should African governments keep in mind to avoid these pitfalls and ensure truly sustainable waste management strategies are adopted in Africa?
Yes, thank you. So this idea of waste to energy in our context was introduced by mainstream organization, and it was part of like their recommendation for the annual waste characterization report. And many people in the municipality were so much excited with this idea. It was something that was novel, a first thing that they have heard. So they ended up doing their own feasibility, fact-finding to actually see whether this is viable. and they all came to the same conclusion that this thing was unsustainable, was unviable to our context, because our system is still centralized. There is no, the population or the people have not really grasped the idea of waste separation. There are still major hurdles that need to be overcome for such an idea to actually work. So I think for our government, they should really actually look into these ideas or into these technologies, because some of these technologies are being introduced in an environment where there are no or poor regulation. So if you are going to implement or to put a waste-to-energy or waste-incinerator, who is going to measure the air quality control, the environment, what is the environmental impact of this project on the community? So these are things that are often overlooked because people are so much excited with this whole idea of we are being able, we can produce our energy from waste, when actually we have got our tried and tested. We can actually learn from each other, because the conditions that are in Ethiopia are also similar or relatable to what is in Nakuru, Harare, or other African metro. So we need to actually embrace these ideas, because waste to energy, at the end of the day, we are still going to emit our emissions into the air. So we are actually going to be producing greenhouse gases, and this is is actually a setback on our part in terms of the climate agreement and also our implementation of the NDCs, the National Determined Contribution. So our government really need to exhaust resources in actually looking in terms of the viability. But unfortunately, now there's so much excitement, and also some see it as an opportunity to make money. So they ended up like overlooking the risk of what this is on the community, because they think they're going to earn, they'll be earning money. And even if you look at the structure and the nature of the agreements, it's actually true to take away the responsibility of refuse collection from the community, from the municipality. So we want something that gives people back the ownership of the community in terms of how much or a liter is being produced per capita per household. The population or the people should be able to control the amount of liter that they produce, to be actually be aware of the amount of liter they produce, because there are certain things that, you know, people put to waste but should but can be put to other use. So this is the kind of a citizenry or a perspective that we need to build in the population, instead of just taking on these ideas of waste to energy. And I was happy that Eskata mentioned the Black Soldier Fly. This is something that is very interesting, that we feel like is very much suited to this environment, where we've got a lot of peasant rural farmers who can actually adopt this technology. It's a very high yield in terms of the amount of protein that you can give to your feed, to your poultry, to your livestock, and also the effort that you need that is put to actually produce to run this Black Soldier Fly colony. So I think for me, our government actually need to look into these ideas and sincerely examine whether this works for the people or it's just something that is coming from Europe and we think is better. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mikhail. We've had cities in Europe and US go bankrupt because of the adoption of waste to energy incineration deals. Africa, a lot of countries in Africa are already in debt and do not need to go into this path of debt and pollution. So once again, I want to thank you for joining this session. I'd like to ask if we have any closing session, closing thoughts before I finally round up this wonderful session.
Yeah, I mean, in closing, I think I want to stress that, you know, when we are considering the challenges that our governments face in terms of waste management in Africa and the full solution incinerators offer, we have to appreciate that a significant portion of the pressure to consider incineration does not actually come from our national governments or municipalities. This is partly an industry-driven technology transfer, and it is unfortunately also nowadays we see it being backed by climate finance, which is a very sad development. And I think we need to recognize this external pressure and make sure that especially when it comes to climate finance, it is actually mobilized in a way to actually better the lives of communities in, you know, our African nations. Because climate change is already causing a devastating impact on our communities, we really should not add to that devastation by actually incentivizing technologies that can actually do more harm than good. Like I said, instead of that, we really have a clear path in terms of a more viable, affordable, compatible solution through a zero waste approach. So we have to really rally together to make sure that climate finance actually incentivizes those alternatives instead of incompatible technologies. Thank you.
If there's one takeaway from today, is this: waste to energy incineration treats the symptom and not the cause. Africa's challenge is not technological, it's structural. We don't need to burn our waste to prove we're modern. We need to manage it wisely to prove we're just. Development must mean empowerment, not dependency. Progress must mean cleaner air, not costlier mistakes. If you'd like to learn more, check out Gaia's new report on the REPI waste to energy facility in Ethiopia. And the link will be shared below. This has been an interesting podcast session. Thanks to the Africa for Zero Waste podcast initiative. I'm Wayne Okoti, and thank you for listening. And until next time, stay engaged and stay informed. Thank you very much.